the village of Tumas when he'd seen the first ban, nailed to the side of a ramshackle body. 20 paces beyond it he'd found the second, then the third, and the fourth. Gillian St. Clair was marrying Quinn de Moncrief. He'd cursed furiously. How long had she waited? 2 days? He hadn't slept that night, consumed by a rage so violent that it had threatened to release the berserker without any bloodshed to bring it on. The rage had only intensified, goading him to Occam's back, sending him in circles around the highlands. He'd ridden to the edges of Caithness, turned around, and come back, ripping down bands all the way, ranging like a maddened beast from lowland to highland. Then he turned around again, compelled to Caithness by a force beyond his understanding, a force that reached into the very marrow of his bones. Grim tossed his braids out of his face and growled. In the forest nearby, a wolf responded with a mournful howl. He'd had the dream again last night, the one in which Gillian watched him turn berserk, the one in which she laid her palm against his chest and looked into his eyes and they connected, Gillian and the beast. In his dream, Grim had realized the beast loved Gillian as deeply as the man, and was just as incapable of ever harming her. In the light of day, he no longer feared that he might hurt Gillian, not even with the threat of his Da's madness. He knew himself well enough to know that not even in the wildest throes of Berserker Gang could he harm her. But in his dream, as Gillian had searched his blazing, unholy eyes, fear and revulsion had marked her lovely features. She'd extended a hand, palm out, to stay him, begging him to go far away as quickly as Occam could carry him. The berserker had made a pathetic sound while the man's heart slowly iced over, cooler than the ice-blue eyes that had witnessed so much loss. In his dream, he'd fled for the cover of darkness to hide from her horrified gaze. Once Quinn had asked him what could kill a berserker, and now he knew, a thing so slight as the look on Gillian's face. He'd woken from the dream filled with despair. Today was Gillian's wedding, and if dreams were portents, she would never forgive him for what he was about to do should she ever uncover his true nature. But need she ever know? He would hide the berserker inside him forever if necessary. He would never again save anyone, never fight, never view blood. He would never reveal himself. He would live as a mere man. They would stop at Dalkeith, where the hawk stored a considerable fortune for Grimm, and, with enough gold to buy her a castle in any country, they would flee far from the treacherous McCain and those who knew his secret. If she would still have him. He knew what he was about to do was not the honorable thing, but truth be told, he no longer cared. God forgive him, he was a berserker who likely suffered his Da's madness somewhere in his veins, but he could not stand by and permit Gillian St. Clair to wed another man while he still lived and breathed. Now he understood what she'd known instinctively, years ago, the day he'd stepped out of the woods and stood looking down at her. Gillian St. Clair was his. The hour was approaching noon, and he was no more than 3 miles from Caithness when he was ambushed. Chapter 24
Ye gods!
Gillian drifted back from her wandering thoughts, alarmed. The pudgy priest was almost to the I do part. Gillian craned her neck, searching frantically for her father, with no success. The great hall was crammed to overflowing. Guests angled up the staircase, hung over the balustrade, and were stuffed into every nook and cranny. Fear gripped her. What if her mother had made up the story of her father's plan merely as a ruse to get her to stand up in front of the crowd? What if her mama had deliberately lied, wagering that once they got to the vows, Gillian wouldn't have the nerve to dishonor her parents and Quinn, not to mention herself, by refusing to wed him?
If there are any here today who know some weason why these two should remain separate, speak now, or forever hoard your wheest.
The hall was silent. The pause stretched over the length of several heartbeats. As it lengthened intolerably into minutes, people began to yawn, shuffle their feet, and stretch impatiently. Silence. Gillian puffed at her veil and peeked at Quinn. He stood ramrod straight beside her, his hands clasped. She whispered his name, but either he didn't hear or he refused to acknowledge it. She peered at the priest, who seemed to have fallen into a trance, gazing at the bound volume in his hands. What on earth was going on? She tapped her foot and waited for her Da to say something to bring this debacle to a screeching halt.
I said, if there are any here who see some weason,
the priest intoned dramatically. More silence. Jillian's nerves stretched to breaking. What was she doing? If her Da wouldn't rescue her, to hell with him. She refused to be cowed by fear of scandal. She was her father's daughter, by God, and he'd never genuflected to the false idol of propriety. She puffed at her veil, flipped it back impatiently, and scowled at the priest.
Oh, for goodness sake! Don't get snippy with me, missy,
the priest snapped.
I'm just doing my job.
Jillian's courage was momentarily quashed by his unexpected rebuke. Quinn caught her hand in his.
Is something wrong, Jillian? Are you feeling unwell? Your face is flushed.
His gaze was full of concern and sympathy.
I
can't marry you, is what she started to say, when the doors to the great hall burst open, crushing several unsuspecting people against the wall. Her words were swallowed in the din of indignant squeals and yelps. All eyes flew to the entrance. A great gray stallion reared up in the doorway, its breath frosting the air with puffs of steam. It was a scene from every fairy tale romance she'd ever read. The handsome prince bursting into the castle astride a magnificent stallion, ablaze with desire and honor as he declared his undying love before all and sundry. Her heart swelled with joy. Then her brow puckered as she scrutinized her prince. Well, it was almost like a fairy tale, except this prince was dressed in nothing but a drenched and muddy tartan with blood on his face and hands, and war braids plaited at his temples. Although determination glittered in his gaze, a declaration of undying love didn't appear to be his first priority.
Jillian! He roared.
Her knees buckled. His voice brought her violently to life. Everything in the room receded, and there was only Grimm, blue eyes blazing, his massive frame filling the doorway. He was majestic, towering, and ruthless. Here was her fierce warrior ready to battle the world to gain her love. He urged Occam into the crowd, making his way toward the altar.
Grimm,
she whispered. He drew up beside her. Sliding from Occam's back, he dropped to the floor next to the bride and groom. He looked at Quinn. The two men gazed at each other a tense moment. Then Quinn inclined his head the merest fraction and stepped back a pace. The great hall hushed as 500 guests stood riveted by the unfolding spectacle. Grimm was at a sudden loss for words. Jillian was so beautiful, a goddess clad in shimmering satin. He was covered with blood, mud-stained and filthy, while behind them stood the incomparable Quinn, impeccably attired, titled and noble, Quinn, who had all that he lacked. The blood on his hands was a relentless reminder that despite his fervent vows to conceal the berserker, the McCain would always be there. They'd been lying in wait for him today. What if they attacked him when he was traveling with Jillian? Four had escaped him. The others were dead. But those four were trouble enough. They would round up more men and continue hunting Grimm until either the last McCain was dead, or he was, along with anyone traveling with him. What could he hope to accomplish by taking her now? What fool's dream had possessed him to come here today? What desperate hope had convinced him he might be able to hide his true nature from her? And how would he survive the look on her face when she saw him for what he really was?
I'm a bloody fool, he muttered.
A smile curved Jillian's lip.
Yes, that you've been on more than one occasion, Grimm Roderick. You were most foolish when you left me. But I do believe I might forgive you now that you've come back.
Grimm sucked in a harsh breath. Berserker be damned, he had to have her.
Will you come with me, Jillian? Say yes, woman, he prayed.
A simple nod was her immediate response. His chest swelled with unexpected emotion.
I'm sorry, Quinn, Grimm said.
He wanted to say more, but Quinn shook his head, leaned close, and whispered something in Grimm's ear. Grimm's jaw tensed, and they stared at each other in silence. Finally, Grim nodded.
Then you go with my blessing,
Quinn said clearly. Grim extended his arms to Jillian, who slipped into his embrace. Before he could succumb to the urge to kiss her senseless, he tossed her on Occam's back and mounted behind her. Jillian scanned the worried faces around her. Ramsay was gazing at Grim with a shocking amount of hatred in his eyes, and she was momentarily flustered by the intensity of it. Quinn's expression was a blend of concern and reluctant understanding. She finally spotted her Da, where he stood with her mother a dozen feet away. Elizabeth's face was grim. Gibraltar held her gaze a moment, then nodded encouragingly. Jillian leaned back into Grimm's broad chest and gave a small sigh of pleasure.
I would live any kind of life I had to live, so long as I lived it with you, Grim Roderick.
It was all he needed to hear. His arms tightened around her waist. He kneed Occam forward, and together they fled Caithness.
Now that's my idea of how a man takes a woman to wife, Gibraltar observed with satisfaction.
An Iliac Prophecy. Legend tells that the clan Iliac will prosper for 1,000 years, birthing warriors who will accomplish great good for Alba. In the fertile vale of Tuluth, a castle shall rise around the Hall of Gods, and many shall covet what belongs to Scotia's blessed race. The seers warn that an envious clan shall pursue the Iliac until they are but three. The three will be scattered like seeds uprooted by the wind of betrayal, cast far and wide, and all will appear to be lost. Much grief and despair will descend upon the Holy Vale. But hearken to hope, sons of Odin, for the three shall be gathered by his far-reaching grasp. When the young Iliac finds his true mate, she shall bring him home, the enemy shall be vanquished, and the Iliac shall thrive for 1,000 years more. Chapter 25. They rode hard until early evening, when Grim drew Occam to a stop in a copse of trees. Upon leaving Caithness, he'd tugged a plaid from his pack and secured it tightly around Jillian's body, forming a nearly waterproof barrier between her and the elements. He hadn't uttered a word since then. His face had been so grim that she'd kept her silence, allowing him time and privacy to muddle through his thoughts. She'd nestled back against him, contentedly savoring the press of his hard body against hers. Grim Roderick had come for her. While such an inauspicious beginning might not be the perfect way to start a life together, it would do. For Grim Roderick to steal a woman from her wedding, he must intend to care for her the rest of her life, and that's all she'd ever desired, a life with him. By the time he drew Occam to a halt, the freezing rain had abated, but the temperature had plummeted. Winter was encroaching, and she suspected they were headed directly for the highlands, where the chill winds gusted with twice the vigor as in the lowlands. She clutched the plaid snugly around her, sealing out the cold air. Grim dismounted, lowered her from the saddle, and held her for a moment.
God, I missed you, Jillian!
The words exploded from him. She tossed her head, delighted.
What took you so long, Grim?
His expression was impossible to interpret. He glanced self-consciously at his hands, which were badly in need of a washing. He busied himself with a flagon of water and a scrap of clean plaid for a moment, removing the worst of the stains.
I had a wee bit of a skirmish on the way, and then...
he mumbled inaudibly. She studied his disheveled clothing, but decided not to ask him about it then. The mud and blood appeared to be from a recent fight, but what had happened in the last few days wasn't her first concern.
That's not what I meant. It took you over a month. Was it so difficult for you to decide if you wanted me?
She forced a teasing smile to camouflage the wounded part of her that was utterly serious.
Never think that, Jillian. I wake up wanting you. I fall asleep wanting you. I watch a magnificent sunrise and can think of only of sharing it with you. I glimpse a piece of amber and see your eyes. Jillian, I've caught a disease, and the fever abates only when I'm near you.
She flashed him a radiant smile.
You're nearly forgiven. So tell me, what took you so long? Is it that you think you're not good enough for me, Grim Roderick? Because you're not titled, I mean.
When he didn't respond, she hastened to reassure him.
"I don't care, you know. A title doesn't make the man, and you're certainly the finest man I've ever known. What on earth do you think is wrong with you?"
His stubborn silence didn't serve as the deterrent he intended. She scurried down an alternate route of inquiry.
"Quinn told me you think your father is mad, and you're afraid you've inherited his madness. He said it was nonsense, and I must tell you I agree, because you're the most intelligent man I've ever met, except for the times when you don't trust me, which evidences a glaring lapse in your customary good judgment."
Grimm stared at her, disconcerted.
"What else did Quinn tell you?"
"That you love me,"
she said simply. He swept her into his embrace in one swift move. He buried his hands in her hair and kissed her urgently. She savored the rock-hard press of his body against hers, his teasing tongue, his strong hands cupping her face. Jillian melted against him, wordlessly demanding more. The past month without him, followed by hours pressed against his muscled body as they'd ridden, had begun a slow burn of desire within her. For the past hour, her skin had tingled at every point of contact with his body, and a trembling heat had gathered in her midsection, seeping lower, awakening shockingly intense feelings of desire. She'd been oblivious to the terrain, her mind fully occupied with imagining, in blush-inducing detail, the many different ways she wanted to make love with him. Now she practically vibrated with need, and she responded wildly to his kiss. Her body was already prepared for him, and she pressed encouragingly against his hips. He stopped kissing her as suddenly as he'd begun.
"We must continue riding," he said tightly. "We have a long way to go, lass. I do not wish to keep you out here in the cold any longer than I must."
He pulled away so abruptly that Jillian gaped at him and nearly screamed with frustration. She was so heated from the kiss that the chill air was inconsequential, and she certainly had no intention of waiting even a moment longer to make love with him again. She let her eyes flutter slowly closed and swayed a bit. Grimm eyed her intently.
"Are you feeling all right, lass?"
"No,"
Jillian replied, casting him a sidelong glance beneath her lowered lashes.
"Frankly, I feel decidedly odd, Grimm, and I don't know what to make of it."
He moved back to her side instantly, and she prepared to spring her trap.
"Where do you feel odd, Jillian? Have I—"
"Here."
She swiftly took his hand and placed it on her breast.
"And here."
She guided his other hand to her hips. Grimm took several deep breaths and blew them out, willing his thundering heart to slow, to quit pumping so much blood to his loins, and perhaps let his brain in on the bargain so he might entertain a coherent thought.
"Jillian,"
he said, exhaling a frustrated breath.
"Well, my,"
she said mischievously, moving her hands over his body.
"You seem to be suffering the same ailment."
Her hand closed over him through his plaid, and he made a low, growling sound deep in his throat. They both spoke at once.
"It's freezing out here, lass. I won't subject you. I'm not to the cold for my own selfish needs."
"Fragile Grimm, and what about my selfish needs?
And I can't make love to you properly outside."
"Oh, and is properly the only way you've ever wanted me?"
she mocked. His gaze locked with hers, and his eyes darkened with desire. He seemed immobilized, obtusely assessing the cold, considering all of her needs, except for the one that really mattered. In a low voice, she said,
"Do it. Take me. Now."
His eyes narrowed and he sucked in a harsh breath.
"Jillian."
A storm gathered in his ice-blue eyes, and she wondered for a moment what she'd called forth. A beast. Her beast. And she wanted him exactly the way he was. The force of his passion hit her like a sea gale, hot and salty and primitive in its power, holding nothing back. They exploded against each other, driving their bodies as close together as they could. He backed her against a tree, thrust her gown up, and pushed his plaid aside, all the while kissing her eyelids, her nose, her lips, plunging his tongue so deeply into her mouth that she felt herself drowning in the man's sensuality.
"I need you, Jillian St. Clair. Ever since I tossed you up on my horse, I've been wanting nothing more than to drag you back off it and bury myself in you, without a word of explanation or apology, because I need you.
Yes,
she whispered fervently.
That's what I want.
With a swift stroke, he plunged deeply into her, but the storm was in her body, and it raged with the devastating fury of a hurricane. She tossed her head back and freed her voice, crying out to him, only the creatures of the wilderness to hear. She moved against him urgently, her hips rising to meet every thrust. Her hands clawed at his shoulders, and she raised her legs, wrapping them tightly around his waist, locking her ankles over his muscled hips. With each thrust, he pressed her back against the tree trunk, and she used it to rock herself back into him, taking him as deeply into her body as she could. Only the sounds of passion escaped their lips. Words simply weren't needed. Bonding and pledging through contact, their bodies spoke in a tongue ancient and unmistakable.
"Chilean!"
he roared as he exploded inside her. An unfettered laugh of delight escaped her as the rush of his liquid warmth inside her pushed her over the edge of pleasure, and she bucked against him. They held on to each other for a reverent moment. Leaning against her in a soft crush, he seemed reluctant to move, as if he wanted to stay joined to her forever. And when he began to stiffen inside her, she knew she'd convinced him that a little cold air was good for the soul. Grim whistled for Occam. Summoning his horse from the woods, he tightened the tethers on the packs. It was full dark, and they needed to be on their way. There was no shelter to be secured tonight, but by the following day they would be far enough into the highlands that he could provide shelter for them each night to come. He glanced over his shoulder at Jillian. It was imperative to him that he keep her happy, warm, and safe.
"Are you hungry, Jillian? Are you dry enough? Warm enough?"
"No, yes, and yes. Where are we going, Grim?"
she asked, still feeling dreamy from their intense lovemaking.
"There's an abandoned cottage a day's ride from here."
"I didn't mean now. I meant, where are you taking me after that?"
Grim pondered his answer. He'd originally planned to ride directly to Dalkeith, then leave as soon as they gathered his fortune and loaded the horses. But he'd begun to think running might not be necessary. He'd spent much of their time on the ride from Caithness mulling over something Quinn had said.
"Hell, man! Rouse an army and fight the McCain once and for all! I know scores of men who would fight for you. I would."
As would the Hawks army, as well as many of the men he'd known at court, men who fought for hire. Grim loathed the idea of taking Jillian away from Scotland, from her family. He knew what it was like to be without a clan. If he triumphed over the McCain, he could purchase an estate near her family and have only one demon to battle. He could devote his energy to concealing his nature and making Jillian a fine husband.
"Promise me you'll tell her the truth,"
Quinn had demanded in a low, urgent whisper against his ear. Grim had nodded. But he hadn't said when, he prevaricated lamely as he studied her innocent features. "Maybe next year, or a lifetime from now." In the meantime, he had other battles to wage.
"Dalkeith, my good friend and his wife are laird and lady there. You'll be safe with them."
Jillian snapped to attention, dreamy reverie squashed by the thought of an impending separation.
"What do you mean, I will be safe there? Don't you mean we will be safe there?"
Grim fidgeted with Occam's saddle.
"Grim? We, right?"
he muttered, deliberately incoherent. Jillian eyed him a moment and snorted delicately.
"Grim? You don't plan to take me to Dalkeith and leave me there by myself, do you?"
Her eyes narrowed, forecasting a tempest if such was his intention. Without raising his head from an intent inspection of Occam's tethers, he replied,
"Only for a time, Jillian. There's something I must do, and I need to know you'll be safe while I'm doing it."
Jillian watched him fidget and considered her options. His good friend and his wife, he'd said. People who would know something about her man of mystery. That was promising, if not her preference. She wished he would confide in her, tell her what kept him solitary, but she would work with what she could get. Maybe what had happened in his past was too painful for him to discuss.
"Where is Dalkeith?"
"In the Highlands."
"Near where you were born?"
"Past there.
We have to circle around Tuluth to get to Dalkeith.
Why circle around it? Why not raid through it?
Gillian fished. Because I have never gone back to Tuluth and I do not plan to now. Besides, the village was destroyed.
Well, if it was destroyed, that makes it even harder to raid around it. Why avoid nothing?
Grim raised a brow. Must you always be so logical?
Must you always be so evasive?
She countered, arching a brow of her own. I just do not wish to ride through it, all right?
Are you certain it's in ruins?
When Grim buried a hand in his hair, Gillian finally understood. The only time Grim Roderick started messing with his hair was when she asked him a question he didn't want to answer. She almost laughed. If she continued questioning him, he might rip it out by the handfuls. But she needed answers, and occasionally her digging resulted in a few treasures. What could possibly make him avoid Tuluth like the darkest plague?
Oh, my goodness!
She breathed as intuition pointed an unerring finger toward the truth.
Your family is still alive, aren't they, Grim?
Ice-blue eyes flew to hers, and she watched him struggle to avoid her question. He toyed with his war braids, and she bit her lip, waiting.
My da is still alive, he conceded.
Although she'd already arrived at such a conclusion herself, his admission threw her off balance.
What else didn't you tell me, Grim?
That Quinn told you the truth. He's an insane old man, Grim said bitterly.
Truly insane? Or do you mean you just disagree about things, like most people do with their parents?
I do not wish to talk about it.
How old is your da? Have you other family I don't know about?
Grim walked away and started pacing.
No.
Well, what is your home like in Tuluth?
It's not in Tuluth, he said through set teeth. My home was in a bleak, dreary castle carved into the mountain above Tuluth.
Gillian wondered what other astonishing things might be revealed if he kept answering her questions.
If your home was in the castle, then you must be either a servant.
She eyed him from head to toe and shook her head as comprehension crashed over her.
Oh, here I am prattling on about titles, and you don't even say anything. You're a chieftain's son, aren't you? You wouldn't by chance be his oldest son, would you?
She asked, mostly in jest. When he quickly averted his gaze, she exclaimed,
You mean you'll be the laird one day? There's a clan awaiting your return?
Never. I will never return to Tuluth, and that's the end of this discussion. My da is a batty old bastard, and the castle is in ruins, along with the village. Half my clan was destroyed years ago, and I'm certain the remaining half scattered to escape the old man and rebuild elsewhere. I doubt there's anyone left in Tuluth at all. It's likely nothing but ruins.
He stole a surreptitious glance at Gillian to see how she was taking his confession. Gillian's mind was whirling. Something didn't make sense, and she knew she was lacking vital information. Grimm's childhood home lay between here and their destination, and answers lay in the moldering old ruin. A batty old da, and insight that would show her the way to Grimm's deepest heart.
Why did you leave?
She asked gently. He faced her, his blue eyes glittering in the fading light.
Gillian, please, not so many questions at once. Give me time. These things, I haven't spoken of them since they happened.
His eyes wordlessly pleaded with her for patience and understanding.
Time I can give. I'll be patient, but I won't give up.
Promise me that. He was suddenly grave. Promise me you'll never give up, no matter what.
On you? I wouldn't. Goodness, as mean as you were to me when I was a wee lass, I still didn't give up on you,
she said lightly, hoping to brighten his somber expression.
On us, Gillian. Promise me you'll never give up on us.
He tugged her back into his arms and gazed down at her so intensely it nearly took her breath away.
I promise, she breathed, and I take my honor as seriously as any warrior.
He relaxed infinitesimally, hoping he'd never need to remind her of her words.
Are you certain you're not hungry yet?
He changed the subject swiftly.
"I can wait until we stop for the night,"
she assured him absently, too occupied with her thoughts to consider physical demands. She no longer wondered why he had appeared so late, bloody and mud-stained. He had come, and that was enough for now. There were other bigger questions she needed answered. As they remounted, he drew her against him and she relaxed, relishing the feel of his hard body. A few hours later, she reached a decision. A lass has to do what a lass has to do, she told herself firmly. By morning, she planned to acquire a sudden case of inexplicable illness that would demand they secure permanent shelter long before they reached Dalkeith. She had no idea that, by morning, serendipity would take charge of events for her, with a twisted sense of humor. Chapter 26 Jillian rolled over, stretched, and peered through the dim light at Grimm. Furs hung over the windows of the cottage. They barred entrance to the bitter wind, but also permitted little light. The fire had burned down to embers hours ago, and in the amber glow that remained he looked like a bronzed warrior, a heroic, mighty Viking stretched out on the pallet of furs, with one arm bent behind his head, the other curled about her waist. By the saints, but the man was beautiful. In repose, his face had the kind of perfection that made one think of an archangel, created by a joyous god. His brows winged in black arches above eyes that were fringed with thick lashes. Although tiny lines splayed out from the corners of his eyes, he had few laugh lines around his mouth, a lack she intended to remedy. His nose was straight and proud. His lips, she could spend a day just gazing at those firm pink lips that curved sensually, even in his sleep. She dropped a whisper-light kiss upon the stubborn cleft in his chin. When they'd arrived the night before, Grimm had built a roaring fire and melted buckets of snow for a bath. They'd shared a tub, shivering in the frigid air until the heat of passion had warmed them to the bone. On a lush pile of furs, they'd wordlessly renewed their pledge to each other. The man was patently inexhaustible, she thought contentedly. Her body ached pleasantly from the marathon lovemaking. He'd shown her things that made her cheeks flame and her heart race in anticipation of more. Steamy thoughts decamped abruptly when her stomach chose that moment to lurch alarmingly. Rendered momentarily breathless from the sudden nausea, she curled on her side and waited for the feeling to recede. As they'd had little to eat last night and been very active, she concluded she was probably hungry. An aching tummy would certainly make her plan to convince Grimm she was too sick to ride to Dalkeith easier to enact. What illness could she claim? An upset stomach might not be convincing enough to make him consider stopping in a village he'd sworn never to see again. Conveniently, another wave of nausea gripped her. She scowled as the possibility occurred to her that she'd actually made herself ill merely by planning to pretend she was. She lay motionless, waiting for the discomfort to subside, and conjured visions of her favorite food, hoping that imagination would quash the hunger pains. Thoughts of Kaylee's pork roast nearly doubled her over. Baked fish in wine sauce had her gagging in an instant. Bread? That didn't sound so bad. The crustier the better. She tried to inch away from Grimm to snatch the satchel where she'd seen a loaf of brown bread the night before, but in his sleep, he tightened his arm around her waist. Stealthily, she worked at his fingers, but they were like iron vices. As a fresh wave of nausea assaulted her, she moaned and curled into a ball, clutching her stomach. The sound woke Grimm instantly.
"Are you all right, lass? Did I hurt you?"
Afraid he was referring to their excessive lovemaking, she hastened to reassure him. She didn't wish to give him any reason to think twice before bestowing such pleasure on her again.
"I'm only a bit sore,"
she said, then groaned as her stomach heaved again.
"What is it?"
Grimm shot up in bed, and despite her misery, she marveled at his beauty. His black hair fell about his face, and although the thought of food made her feel impossibly queasy, his lips still looked inviting.
"Did I harm you in my sleep?"
he asked hoarsely.
"What is it? Talk to me, lass."
"I just don't feel well. I don't know what's wrong. My stomach hurts."
"Would food help?"
He scuffled through the packs rapidly, uncovering a large piece of greasy, salted beef. He thrust it beneath her nose.
"Oh, no!"
she wailed, lunging to her knees. She scuttled away from him as quickly as possible, but made it only a few feet before retching. He was at her side in a heartbeat, smoothing the hair back from her face.
"Don't!" she cried. "Don't even look at me!"
Jillian hadn't been sick much in her life, but when she had, she loathed anyone seeing her weakened by forces beyond her control. It made her feel helpless. She was probably being punished for planning to be deceitful. That was hardly fair, she thought crossly. She'd never been deceitful in her life. Surely she was entitled to one time, especially since it was for such a good cause. They had to stop at Toluth. She needed answers that she suspected could only be found by returning to Grimm's roots.
"Hush, lass. It's all right. What can I do? What do you need?"
It couldn't be poison, Grimm thought frantically. He'd prepared the food they'd eaten last night himself. A venison he'd tracked and cured while up in the highlands. Then what was it? He wondered, deluged by a flood of emotions. Helplessness. Fear. Realization that this woman in his arms meant everything to him, and that he would take whatever sickness she had and bear it himself if he could. She convulsed again in his arms, and he held her trembling body. It was some time before she stopped heaving. When she finally calmed, he wrapped her in a warm blanket and heated some water over the fire. She lay absolutely still while he washed her face. He was transfixed by her beauty. Despite her illness, Jillian certainly did seem radiant, her skin a translucent ivory, her lips deep pink, her cheeks flushed with rose.
"Are you feeling better, lass?"
She took a deep breath and nodded.
"I think so, but I'm not certain I can ride very far today. Is there a place we might stop between here and Dalkeith?"
she asked plaintively.
"Perhaps we shouldn't go at all,"
he hedged. But they had to move on, and he knew it. Lingering here another day was the most dangerous thing he could do. If the McCain were following, one more day might well cost them their lives. He closed his eyes and pondered the dilemma. What if they started off again, and she became sicker? Where could he take her? Where could they hide away until she was well enough to travel?
"Of course," he thought sardonically. Toluth.
Chapter 27. As they neared the village of his birth, Grimm lapsed into a protracted silence. They'd ridden at an easy gait through the day, and Jillian had rapidly recovered her customary vigor. Despite her improved health, she forced herself to continue the charade. They were too close to Toluth for her to waffle in indecision. They had to go to Toluth. It was necessary, whether she condoned her methods or not. She suffered no delusions that Grimm would return voluntarily. If he had his way, he'd forget the village ever existed. While she accepted the fact that Grimm couldn't bring himself to talk about his past, she had a suspicion that returning to Toluth might be more necessary for him than it was for her. It was possible he needed to confront his memories in order to lay them to rest. For her part, she needed to examine the evidence with her own eyes and hands, speak with his batty da, and fish for information. In the rubble and debris of the destroyed castle, she might find clues to help her understand the man she loved. Jillian glanced down at his hand, so big it nearly cupped both of hers, while he guided Occam with the other. What could he possibly think was wrong with him? He was noble and honest, with the exception of speaking about his past. He was strong, fearless, and one of the best warriors she'd ever seen. The man was virtually invincible. Why, he put the legends of those mythical beasts, the berserkers, to shame. Jillian smiled, thinking men like Grimm were where such legends were born. Why, he even had the legendary fierce blue eyes. If such beings truly existed, he might have been one of those mighty warriors, she thought dreamily. She hadn't been surprised to learn he was the son of a chieftain. Nobility was evident in every line of his magnificent face. She released a sigh of pleasure and leaned back into his chest.
"We're nearly there, lass,"
he said comfortingly, misinterpreting the sigh.
"Will we be going to the castle?"
she asked weakly.
"No. There are some caves where we can take shelter on a cliff called Wotan's Cleft. I played there when I was a boy. I know them well.
Wouldn't the castle be warmer? I'm so cold, Grim.
She shivered in what she hoped was a convincing manner.
If memory serves me, Maldaban is a shambles.
He tucked the plaid more securely about her shoulders and cradled her in the heat from his body.
I'm not certain any of the walls are standing. Besides, if my Da is still around anywhere, he probably haunts those crumbling halls.
Well, how about the village? Surely some of your people remained?
She refused to succeed in her bid to reach Tuluth, but be denied contact with people who might know something about her Highland warrior.
Jillian, the entire valley was wiped out. I suspect it will be completely deserted. We'll be lucky if the caves are still passable. A lot of the passageway shifted, even collapsed into rubble during the years I played there.
More reason to go to the castle, she said quickly. It sounds as if the caves are dangerous.
Grim expelled a breath.
Ah, you're persistent, aren't you, lass?
I'm just so cold, she whimpered,
pushing away the guilt she felt about being deceitful. It was for a good cause. His arms tightened around her.
I'll take care of you, Jillian. I promise.
Where are they, Giles?
Ronan asked.
Nearly 3 miles east, my lord.
Ronan plucked nervously at his tartan and turned to his brother.
Do I look all right?
Balder grinned.
Do I look all right?
He mocked in falsetto, preening for an imaginary audience. Ronan punched him in the arm.
Stop it, Balder, this is important. I'm meeting my son's wife today.
You're seeing your son today,
Balder corrected. Ronan cast his gaze to the stones.
I... that I am, he said finally.
His head whipped back and he glanced at Balder anxiously.
What if he still hates me, Balder? What if he rides up, spits in my face and leaves?
The grin faded from Balder's lips.
Then I'll beat the lad senseless, tie him up, and we'll both be talking to him.
Persuasively, and at our leisure.
Ronan's face brightened considerably.
Now, there's a plan, he said optimistically. Maybe we could do that straight away. What say you?
Ronan.
Ronan shrugged.
It just seems the most direct course, he said defensively.
Balder assessed his brother, his nervous, calloused fingers smoothing the ceremonial tartan, his sleekly combed black hair liberally sprinkled with silver, his jeweled skein duv and velvet sporran, his wide shoulders and not-so-trim waist. He stood taller and with more pride than Balder had seen him stand in years. His blue eyes reflected joy, hope, and fear.
You look every inch a fine laird, brother, Balder said gently. Any son would be proud to call you Da.
Ronan took a deep breath and nodded tightly.
Let's hope you're right. Are the banners hung, Giles?
Giles grinned and nodded.
You do look regal, my lord, he added proudly. And I must say, Tuluth has made a fine showing for us. The valley fairly sparkles. Any lad would be pleased to see this as his future domain.
And the Hall of Lords. Has it been cleaned and opened? Are the torches lit?
Yes, my lord, and I've hung the portrait in the dining hall.
Ronan gulped a breath of air and began pacing.
The villagers have been informed, all of them.
They're waiting in the streets, Ronan, and the banners have been hung throughout Tuluth as well. It's a fine homecoming of plan, Balder said.
Let's just hope he thinks so,
Ronan muttered, pacing. Grim's fingers tightened on Jillian's waist as Occam carefully picked his way up the back pass to Votan's cleft. He had no intention of taking Jillian to the cold, damp caves, where a fire could smoke them out if the wind suddenly changed course down one of the tunnels. But from the cleft, he could assess the village and the castle. If any part of it was still standing, he could scan for smoke from a hearth if anyone inhabited the ghost village. Besides, he preferred Jillian to see immediately what a desolate place it was, so she might wish to hurry on to Dalkeith as soon as she was able. She seemed to be making a rapid recovery, although she was still weak and complained of intermittent queasiness. The sun topped the peak of the cleft. It wouldn't set for several more hours, allowing him ample time to assess the potential dangers and secure shelter somewhere in the ruined village. If Jillian was well tomorrow morning, they could race for the shores of Dalkeith. To avoid leading the McCain to the Douglas estate, he planned to stop in a nearby village and send a messenger for Hawk. They would meet discreetly to discuss the possibility of raising an army and plan Jillian's and his future. As the tall standing stones of Votan's cleft came into view, Grimm's chest tightened painfully. He forced himself to take deep, even breaths as they navigated the rocky path. He hadn't anticipated the force with which his bitter memories would resurface. He'd last climbed this path 15 years ago, and it had forever changed his life.
"Hear me, Odin! I summon the Berserker!"
He descended a boy, and descended a monster. His hands fisted. How could he have considered coming back here? But Jillian snuggled against him, seeking warmth, and he knew he would enter Tuluth willingly, even if it were occupied by hordes of demons, to keep her safe and warm.
"Are you all right, Grimm?"
How typically Jillian, he marveled. Despite her own sickness, her concern was for him.
"I'm fine. We'll be warm soon, lass. Just rest."
He sounded so worried that Jillian had to bite her tongue to prevent an instant confession from escaping.
"In a moment you'll be able to see where the village used to be," he said, sorrow roughening his voice.
"I can't imagine what it would be like to see Caithness destroyed. I didn't mean to bring you back to a place that is so painful."
"It happened many years ago. It's almost as if it happened in another lifetime."
Jillian sat up straight as they topped the crest and searched the landscape with curious eyes.
"There." Grimm directed her attention to the cliff. "From the promontory, the whole valley comes into view."
He smiled faintly.
"I used to come up here and look out over the land, thinking that a lad had never been born luckier than I."
Jillian winced. Occam moved forward, his gait steady. Jillian held her breath as they approached the edge.
"The caves lie behind us, beyond that tumble of stones where the slope of the mountain is steepest. My best friend Aaron and I once vowed we would map out every tunnel, every chamber in that mountain, but the passages seemed to go on forever. We'd nearly mapped out a quarter of it before.
Remorse for dragging him back to face his demons flooded her.
"Was your friend killed in that battle?"
"Aye."
"Was your da hurt in the battle?"
she asked gently.
"He should have died," Grimm said tightly. "The McCain buried a battle axe in his chest clear to the hilt. It's amazing he survived. For several years after, I assumed he had died."
"And your mother?"
she said in a whisper. There was silence, broken only by the sound of shale crushing beneath Occam's hooves.
"We'll be able to see it any moment, lass."
Jillian's gaze fixed on the cliff's edge, where the rock terminated abruptly and became the horizon. Hundreds of feet down she would find the ashes of Tuluth. She drew herself up straighter, nearly tumbling from the horse in her anxiety, and braced herself for the grim scene.
"Hold, lass,"
Grimm soothed as they took the last few steps to the cliff and gazed out over the lifeless valley. For nearly 5 minutes, he didn't speak. Jillian wasn't certain he breathed. On the other hand, she wasn't certain she did, either. Below them, nestled around a crystalline river and several sparkling lochs, a vibrant city teemed with life. White huts washed to soft amber by the afternoon sun. Hundreds of homes dotted the valley in even rows along meticulously maintained roads. Smoke from cozy fires spiraled lazily from flues, and although she couldn't hear the voices, she could see children running and playing. People walked up and down the roads where an occasional lamb or cow wandered. Two wolfhounds played in a small garden. Along the main roadway that ran down the center of the city, brilliantly colored banners waved and flapped in the breeze. Astonished, she scanned the valley, following the river to the face of the mountain. It bubbled from an underground source at the mountain's base, the castle towering in stone above it. Her hand flew to her lips to smother a cry of shock. This was not what she'd expected to see. A bleak and dreary castle, he'd called it. Nothing could have been further from the truth. Castle Maldaban was the most beautiful castle she'd ever laid eyes on. With its exquisitely carved towers and regal face, it looked as if it had been liberated from the mountain by the hammer and chisel of a visionary sculptor. Constructed of pale gray stone, it rose in mighty arches to a breathtaking height. The mountain effectively sealed the valley at that end, and the castle sprawled along the entire width of the closure, wings stretching east and west from the castle proper. Its mighty towers made Caithness look like a summer cottage, nay, like a child's tree loft. No wonder Castle Maldaban had been the focus of an attack. It was an incredible, enviable stronghold. The guard walk at the top was dotted with dozens of uniformed figures. The entrance was visible beyond the portcullis and postern, unsoared nearly 50 feet. Brightly clad women dotted the lower walkways, scurrying to and fro with baskets and children.
Grim?
Jillian croaked his name. Ruins? Her brow furrowed in consternation as she wondered how this could possibly be. Was it possible Grim had misunderstood who lost that fateful battle years ago? A huge banner with bold lettering rippled above the entrance to the castle. Jillian narrowed her eyes and squinted, much as she chided Zeke for doing, but she couldn't make out the words.
"What does it say, Grim?"
she managed in a hushed whisper, awed by the unexpected vista of peace and prosperity stretching before her eyes. For a long moment, he didn't answer. She heard him swallow convulsively behind her, his body as rigid as the rocks Occam shifted his hooves upon.
"Do you think maybe some other clan took over this valley and rebuilt?"
she offered faintly, latching onto any reason she could find to make sense of things. He released a whistling breath, then punctuated it with a groan.
I doubt it, Jillian.
It's possible, isn't it?
She insisted. If not, Grim might genuinely suffer his Da's madness, for only a madman could call this magnificent city a ruin.
No.
Why? I mean, how can you be certain from here? I can't even make out their plaids.
Because that banner says, "Welcome home, son," he whispered with horror.
Chapter 28.
How am I supposed to make sense of this, Grim?
Jillian asked as the tense silence between them grew. He was staring blankly down at the valley. She felt suddenly and overwhelmingly confused.
How are you supposed to make sense of it?
He slid from Occam's back and lowered her to the ground beside him.
You!
He echoed incredulously. He couldn't find one bit of sense in it either. Not only wasn't his home a ruin of ashes scattered across the valley floor as it was supposed to be, there were bloody welcome banners flapping from the turrets.
Yes,
she encouraged.
Me! You told me this place had been destroyed.
Grim couldn't tear his eyes away from the vision in the valley. He was stupefied, any hope of logic derailed by shock. Tuluth was 5 times the size it had once been, the land tilled in neatly patterned sections, the homes twice as large. Weren't things supposed to seem smaller when one got bigger? His mind objected, with a growing sense of disorientation. He scanned the rocks behind him, seeking the hidden mouth of the cave to reassure himself that he was standing upon Votan's cleft, and that it was indeed Tuluth below him. The river flowing through the valley was twice as wide, bluer than lapis. Hell, even the mountain seemed to have grown. Castle Maldaban was another matter. Had it changed colors? He recalled it as a towering monolith carved from blackest obsidian, all wicked, forbidding angles, dripping moss, and gargoyles. His gaze roved disbelievingly over the flowing lines of the pale gray, inviting structure. Fully occupied, cheerily functional, decorated, by God, with banners. Banners that read, "Welcome home." Grim sank to his knees, opened his eyes as wide as he could, closed and rubbed them, then opened them again. Jillian watched him curiously.
"It's still there, isn't it?"
she said matter-of-factly.
"I tried it too,"
she sympathized. Grim snatched a quick glance at her and was stunned to see a half-smile curving her lip. Is there something amusing about this, lass? He asked, unaccountably offended. Instant compassion flooded her features. She laid a gentle hand on his arm.
Oh, no, Grim. Don't think I'm laughing at you. I'm laughing at how stunned we both are, and partly with relief. I was expecting a dreadful scene. This is the last thing we expected to see. I know the shock must be doubly hard for you to absorb, but I was thinking it's funny because you look like I felt when you first came back to Caithness.
How is that, lass?
Well, when I was little, you seemed so big. I mean huge, monstrous, the biggest man in the world. And when you came back, since I was bigger, I expected you to finally look smaller. Not smaller than me, but at least smaller than you did the last time I'd seen you up close.
And? He encouraged. She shook her head, bewildered.
You didn't. You looked bigger.
And your point is? He tore his gaze from the valley and peered at her.
Well, you were expecting smaller, weren't you? I suspect it's probably much bigger. Shocking, isn't it?
I'm still waiting for your point, lass, he said dryly.
I can see someone should have told you more fables when you were young, she teased. My point is, memory can be a deceptive thing, she clarified. Perhaps the village never was completely destroyed. Perhaps it just seemed that way when you left. Did you leave at night? Was it too dark to see clearly?
Grim took her hands in his as they knelt together on the cliff's edge. It had been night when he'd left Tuluth, and the air had been thick with smoke. It had been a horrifying scene to the 14-year-old lad. He'd left believing his village and home destroyed, and himself a dangerous beast. He'd left filled with hatred and despair, expecting little of life. Now, 15 years later, he crouched upon the same ridge, holding the hands of the woman he loved beyond life itself, gazing upon impossible sights. If Jillian hadn't been with him, he might have tucked tail and run, never permitting himself to wonder what strange magic had been worked in this vale. He raised her hand to his lips and kissed it.
My memory of you was never deceptive. I always remembered you as the best that life had to offer.
Jillian's eyes widened. She tried to speak, but ended up making a small, choked sound instead. Grim stiffened, interpreting her sound for a cry of discomfort.
Here I am, keeping you out in the cold when you're so ill.
That's not what... No,
she stammered.
Truly, I feel much better now.
When he eyed her suspiciously, she added,
Oh, but I do need to get somewhere warm soon, Grim, and that castle certainly looks warm.
She eyed it hopefully. Grim's gaze darted back to the valley. The castle did look warm, and well fortified. Damn near the safest place he could take her, and why not? There were welcome home banners draped in dozens of locations. If the McCain were following him, what better place to stand and fight? How strange it was to return to Tuluth after all these years, with the McCain on his heels once again. Would the pattern finally come full circle and end? Perhaps they wouldn't need to go to Dalkeith to raise an army to fight the McCain after all. But he'd have to face his Da. He blew out a frustrated breath and weighed their options. How could he descend into the valley that cradled all his deepest fears? But how could he explain to Jillian if he turned and rode away? What if her illness returned? What if the McCain caught them? He was confounded by the onslaught of questions with no clear answers. Discovering Tuluth was this glorious place. It was too shocking for his mind to absorb. Jillian winced and rubbed her stomach. His hands tightened on hers and he invoked his legendary willpower, aware that before this day was through he would need every ounce of it. He had no choice. They swiftly remounted and began the descent.
They're coming!
Ronan looked ready to bolt.
Relax, man, Balder chided. It's going to be fine, you'll see.
The MacIliac grimaced.
Easy for you to say. He's not your son. I tell you, he's going to spit in my face.
Balder shook his head and tried not to laugh.
If that's your worst concern, old man,
You have nothing to worry about. Grim and Jillian descended the back of Votan's cleft, circled around the base of it, and picked up the winding road into the mouth of the valley. Five huge mountains formed a natural fortress around the valley, rising like the gentle fingers of an unfurled hand. The city filled its protected palm, verdant, teeming with life. Jillian quickly concluded that when the McCain had attacked Tuluth years ago, they must have been either thoroughly arrogant or impossibly vast in numbers. As if he'd read her mind, Grimm said,
"We weren't always this great in numbers, Jillian. In the past 15 years, Tuluth seems to not only have regained the men lost in the battle with McCain, but increased by..."
His dumbfounded gaze swept the valley.
"Nearly 5 times."
He whistled and shook his head.
"Someone has been rebuilding."
"Are you certain your da is insane?"
Grim grimaced.
"Yes. As certain as I am of anything at the moment," he appended silently.
"Well, for an insane man, he certainly seems to have done wonders here."
"I do not believe he has. Something else must be going on."
"And the welcome back, son, Banner? I thought you said you have no brothers."
"Aduna," he replied stiffly.
He realized they would soon be in clear sight of the first of those banners, and he hadn't told Jillian the truth, that there was absolutely no mistaking who was expected, because he hadn't been entirely truthful before. The dozens of banners hung throughout the city really read, "Welcome back, Gavril." Jillian squirmed, trying to get a better view. Despite his concerns, her lush hips wriggling against his loins sent a bolt of lust through his veins. Memories of last night teased the periphery of his mind, but he could afford no distractions.
"Be still," he growled.
"I just want to see."
"You're going to be seeing the sky from your back if you keep wiggling like that, lass."
He tugged her against him so she could feel what her squirming had accomplished. He'd love nothing more than to lose himself in the passion of Jillian, and when she was sleepily sated, spirit her miles in the other direction. They had come within reading distance of the banners when Jillian leaned